Welcome to episode 392 of Troubadours and Raconteurs with yours truly, E.W. Conundrum Demure. On this week's episode, we feature a grand conversation with artist, playwright, actress, director, humanitarian, Susanna Cook. She is based in New York City. She comes from Argentina via Paris, Gay Paris, and has been a New Yorker for quite some time, sharing her vision, her heart and soul. And we discuss that journey. We discuss dictators and dog whistles and symbols, about homophobia. We get into the Falkland Islands and dancing and preaching to the connected and the converted by creating community. A grand conversation with Susanna Cook on this week's program. We also have an EW essay titled Heart. We share two pieces by Argentinian writer Jorge Luis Borges, Music Box and a Compass. And we have a poem called Soul. And of course, all of this will be imbued, infused with the wonderful energy of several great tunes. It is so nice to have you with us. Let's get to it. Episode 392 of Troubadours and Raconteurs. Thank you. heart. So I dance with immigrants in the streets of plenty, now running dry on empty, without production from the people in power, and without compassion or divine intervention from some white-bearded father figure who lives in the sky. How has this species of ours gone so awry? We look out our windows and see while we walk and drive, not enough of the deeper human sense of what it means to be alive. I speak from the perspective of a European ethnic American in these United States, a land of so much potential, yet curiously lacking in open, honest, intelligent debates that focus on our challenges as a society of people. We are hoodwinked and bamboozled, misdirected in a whirlwind of successive kerfuffles, lacking in substance or reflective of soulful grit. Will this be the legacy of our time? Have we not the capacity to see or strive for a sort of ethical moral justice sublime? Live and let live as brothers and sisters that strive for love and cooperation. Egos sublimated with a collectivism toward unity, dynamic and vigorous, breathing calm, strong and steady through and past baser impulses and temptations. Evolving for real. Happiness is not getting everything you want. So I dance as an immigrant in the streets of plenty, letting not the fear of my mind define my sense of the world or poison my identity.
Little boxes on the hillside, little boxes made of ticky-tacky, little boxes on the hillside, little boxes all the same. There's a pink one and a green one and a blue one and a yellow one, and they're all made out of ticky-tacky, and they all look just the same. And the people in the houses all went to the university, where they were put in boxes and they came out all the same. And there's doctors and lawyers and business executives, and they're all made out of ticky-tacky, and they all look just the same. And they all play on the golf course and drink their martinis dry, and they all have pretty children, and the children go to school, and the children go to summer camp, and then to the university, where they are put in boxes and they come out all the same. And the boys go into business and marry and raise a family in boxes made of ticky-tacky, and they all look just the same. There's a pink one and a green one and a blue one and a yellow one, and they're all made out of ticky-tacky, and they all look just the same.
Susanna Cook, is that you?
Yeah, it's me. How are you?
Good, good. It's nice to have you on Troubadours and Rock on Tours. And I want to make sure, am I saying Susanna the right way? Is it Susanna or Susanna?
Susanna.
Susanna,
yeah.
Susanna. Before we get started, I'd like to share a little background information with the listeners. So Here we go. Susanna Cook is a New York-based playwright, performer, and director who works in political theater. She has been writing and producing original work for over 20 years. Born in Argentina, Susanna graduated from the National School of Drama in Buenos Aires and trained in theater in Paris before moving to the United States in 1991. Susanna's current work focuses on parallels between the dictatorship in Argentina and the present U.S. administration, concerned with issues such as racism, classism, nationalism, and homophobia. Susanna creates powerful political satires that use humor as a tool for exposing the rationales used by those in power to justify oppressions against minorities. She has staged 16 original plays in venues across New York City. Her shows have also been featured internationally in Spain, Argentina, India, Colombia, Mexico, Ecuador, and Canada. And she has led workshops and performed at Yale and Michigan universities, Barnard and Williams College, among others. Troubadours and Rock on Tours is excited to have on the program Susanna Cook. Again, thank you for taking the time out to be on the program. How are you doing during these crazy times?
I'm doing good. I'm adapting to the new reality. I'm a little bit nervous about the elections, but with the pandemic, I've been navigating this, and I'm liking this whole new universe of being online and being on the phone and being. I've been teaching a drag workshop in Medellin, in Colombia. On the 25th of this month, I will be performing in an international cabaret, festival of cabaret in Mexico City, and everything, not living the comfort of my house. You know, it's like and I had people in the workshop from other countries too, people from Medellin mostly, but also people from other places. So I'm trying to look at the positive side of this and trying to be careful and trying to, I always wear a mask. I stay away from people, and I'm doing a lot of making videos. Mostly, my work is becoming mostly on video, and I'm loving it. I work with dogs too. You know, I have a little like doggy daycare, and I take them to the beach, to Orchard Beach. I live in the Bronx, and we go to Orchard Beach, and I go to Van Cortlandt Park. So I'm in the outside and the in the woods, in the beach, and I'm surviving very well. I'm okay.
That's great. It's great to take a positive approach to it all. And
yeah.
And how about your let's give the folks a little sense of, how you got to where you are today. You know, the journey, so to speak. Give us a little bit about your journey.
I started doing theater when I was 16 years old. But then I read in a book that theater was dead, so I became a performance artist. But performance art died soon after I joined, so I became a feminist. But people were talking about post-feminism already. I had no idea why whatever I wanted to join was dying. I thought it was me, so I decided to be immortal. I want to be the biggest artist alive or dead eventually. I just want to be big, the most important writer of my time. I want to create the most impressive artwork of the century, the only one. I want to be singled out. I want to be a landmark of the Western civilization. I want to create one of those pieces of art that you need to mention in order to understand humans, human mind, and human soul. I want to be a mandatory topic in schools. Nobody will understand anything about my work. It will be too difficult for the common mind, like Einstein. Nobody understands his theories, but we respect him. He was a genius. We don't know why. Anyway, when I die, I want to be a website. I want you to remember me, but I don't want to remember you. I forgot everything about you. I don't even remember your name. I digress.
So you don't have high expectations then for yourself? No. Very modest.
No, but it was a joke about individualism. It was a monologue about ambition, individualism, and everything in the art world is about you, but it's like actually not what I do. No, I'm coming from The point is that I started doing theater when I was 16, and it's the same year that the dictatorship started in Argentina. And I was thinking, like, it's not like I made a decision, I'm going to do political theater. I think that when the social reality around you is very intense, it's very crazy, the work of the artist becomes embedded with that reality. It's impossible to create artwork that is not going to be somehow relating to, like, I'm sure all the artists now are doing work that somehow has to do with isolation, pandemic, and dictatorship, and, you know, authoritarian regimes. So I think that, like, I was, for many years, I was going every year for more than 10 years in Colombia. In Bogota, there's a festival of alternative theater that is amazing. And I was looking at all the plays, and I realized there's people coming from all over Colombia to Bogota for that festival. And all the plays, you could call political theater. Absolutely all of them. Like, and they don't even call it political theater. For them, it's theater. And I think that is a little bit like that. I was very young. I was a teenager when, like, I remember we were having breakfast in the morning with my brother, my sister, and my mom. And my mom turned on the radio, and instead of our typical radio program we were listening every morning, there was a little military march. And my mom was like, my mom had lived through dictatorships in Argentina. She said, okay, go back to sleep, it's a coup d'etat. And then, you know, everything like that started happening after that. That's why, like, when things like the ones that are happening right now here appear to be like a deja vu, because it's really, the parallels are so incredible. You know, it's about law and order. You know, these governments always make themselves the law and order, and the way they do that is that they have to exaggerate the threat, like something is about, you know, to destroy the country, the left, the radical left. In Argentina was the same thing. And, like, this president started to... It's so funny, I'm going to tell you that. That gave me a little consolation. That bio that you were reading was probably from another year, from when I was horrified with the Bush presidency, which now seems like a joke compared to this.
Yeah, much better.
Much better, right? I'm sure he's horrified with this president himself. But anyway, you know, like, they always have also like to have, they have Jesus, they have God, they have a country, they own Christmas, whatever, you know.
Well, you heard the first lady, you heard what she said about Christmas, right?
She said something that she doesn't give a shit, something like that, right? Because I saw something about it. Yeah. I didn't hear her, but...
Yeah. She said, she said that, well, I can't say the word because of the FCC, but she said, F Christmas, you know?
I know.
Yeah.
It's all lies. And it's like, religious people would say, like, if you're religious, you're about to help people, not to do what they are doing, to put them in cages. So... Yeah, but at the same time, that's why I think it's very powerful and it's very important, the what is it called, the religious left, or I don't know exactly, I don't remember the name now, but it's like a lot of groups that are very, you know, helping a lot of people, very progressive, very leftist and very religious, and they should be louder, because otherwise these people kind of like take over as the ones who own it. They own God and the flag as if they are the only patriotic ones, and they are not. This guy is already saying that if he loses the election, he's going to leave the country.
Yeah.
And he will, because all this fight to be president is to avoid going to jail. So, yeah.
So you've seen all this before. Now, the dictatorship that you were talking about in Argentina, Which dictator are we talking about?
Well, what I'm talking about, the one that was from 1976 until 1983, was called the Dirty War, and it was a very horrifying chapter in Argentina. There were other dictatorships, but this one in particular was the one that they, you know, these dictators are always anti-science, anti-intellectual, they're very much anti-intellectual. And so because they were exaggerating the threat of these lefties that were organized, they started persecuting. Everything was an excuse for an economic system that they wanted to establish. It has to do with economy. And, you know, an economic system that benefits the rich. It was a neoliberalism at that time, a free market. So they ended up, it was a crazy, crazy, diabolic things that they ended up killing 30,000 young intellectual people who were going to where the poor people were living to help them out. It was, you know, it was also a lot of leftist people and intellectuals, but it was not what they were describing. But then, it was a disaster. It was called the Dirty War.
It was like, I think it was Videla or something like that.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I have family in Argentina too, and I know they've given me a little insight over the years. Some of my family left from Italy and went to Buenos Aires, and some went to the United States. It was horrible for sure. And when I look at history, people like you and people like me, we're the first that they take out in the back and shoot, the dictators.
Yeah.
Because, you know, you question things. You seek an intellectual, thoughtful approach to living life, and that gets in the way of a dictator.
Well, I left. That's why I'm alive. I left when I was 18 and I went to live in Paris. That's why it's not like I went to Paris to study. I left. Well, I knew French and I had a cousin living in Paris, and that's how I ended up there. But if you see in the movie The Two Popes, because this Pope, Pope Francis, he has an interesting history with Argentinian dictatorship. He was kind of like in the middle of it with Videla, and then he regretted. But the worst part of the church in Argentina was that they were giving them their blessing. Like this military, Videla, when he was finally going to trial about the torture and the horrifying things that they did, he went to court with a Bible in his hands. That's why it's so funny that then this guy, Trump, goes to take a photo with a Bible in his hands. They always have to be holding the Bible to do the most horrifying things. Like this guy was throwing pepper, you know, the gas, whatever, to the people who were demonstrating in front of the White House. And then he had to take a photo with the Bible in his hand. It's always those symbols are the ones that I think we have to take away from them. And, you know, it's interesting because now I'm working a lot. A long time ago, I had to do in 2016, I had to do a project in Michigan. It was a site-specific project in a convent that in a place that used to be a convent. And so I did some work with the ghost of those nuns. So I bought a bunch of nuns' costumes, and they were coming out of the old convent, walking very slowly. It was this intense music that was written by my son. And so I had like 70 nuns' costumes that I couldn't throw away because they were expensive. So I keep using them, and I'm using them again now. These nuns were walking in the beach with the dogs, whatever. But I'm doing it, using them for the project in Mexico. And I was thinking that we have to really appropriate those images, you know, like these people really have a lot of power over a lot of people because they appear to be the ones that God prefers or something like that. So anyway.
Right. Now, I want to ask you, though, I mean, when you're looking at the people as compared to the dictators or, you know, the folks that are trying to manipulate them, how much responsibility do you think the people need to take to not be fooled?
I think that it is an identity game, to tell you the truth. I think that this guy was actually, he's an idiot, but he's smart. And
you're talking about Trump, or you're talking about Videla?
Yeah, no, I'm trying. Oops. No, I think now I'm talking about Trump. What Videla was, I was living in, actually, I was living in New York when it was the war, you know, the war with the Falkland Islands.
Yes.
The way he manipulated people was through patriotism. And I was living in Paris. Then I came to New York because I have a cousin in New York. Then I arrived to Argentina, and I was listening to the news here about, like, that England was destroying the poor little boats of Argentina. And I arrived to Argentina, and people that I consider very smart were, like, talking about patriotic things. Like, they were fanatics thinking they were winning the war with England. It was all fake news, which didn't exist at that time. And I think that this guy, even though you listen to what he says, and it's so obvious that he's lying, so obvious that he's saying crap, but he gave them it reminds me of a lot of things, but I can't remember the name of the woman that said that. I'm mixing up everything, but listen, I'm going to get to the point.
Go ahead.
Eventually. No, she was talking about homophobia. And she said, we actually got the wrong name because it's not a phobia. It's a supremacy system. They don't have any phobia. They love it. They feel superior to somebody. And it's kind of like the same thing that this guy did to make these people feel like superior, to feel better. And then it's like all these supremacy games are, I don't think that people are being fooled. Some of them are not being fooled. They are being, lifted to feel, they're making them feel good about themselves. It's the bubble is going to, it's kind of blowing now. I mean, I don't want to get too happy about what is going to happen, but I don't know. It's so complicated. I don't know what I'm getting into.
No, I hear you. It is. That was a tough question I asked because I struggle with that myself. You know, I struggle with all of these questions myself. I'm asking you because I'm wondering if you can help me out. You're listening to Troubadours and Rock on Tours with E.W. Conundrum Demure on WFTE Radio, Mount Cobb and Scranton, Pennsylvania. Community radio at its finest. I really don't know anything. I'm pretty sure of that. But I'm also pretty sure that a lot of folks allow, without reflection, to themselves to be manipulated too easily, and we have to stop allowing that to occur if as a community, as a society, we aren't going to be taken advantage of, you know. And I'm part of it, but sometimes I see it more than I think other people, not everybody, but a lot of people do. People that, in other words, follow Trump, I don't understand why they do, unless they just hate. If it's not about hate and they really believe he's going to help them, I don't understand how they could be so fooled.
It is about hate. And unfortunately, it is. Yeah. And they play the game. I think that our desperation during these last 4 years is what they felt when Obama was president. They hate it. They are racist. And there's so many things that have to be, you know, we what? No, teaching people differently, having different, like, the society is based on so much hatred. And I'm sorry, but it's the way it is. One time I was in the park talking to one guy, and he says, well, in this country, he wasn't a Native American, he was an African American guy, and he said, we killed the soul of this country when we killed the natives. And I was like, whoa, well, that was very strong for the conversation in the park. But I think that there's like a lot of work that has to be done. And I feel that maybe this guy who's so about like increasing the amount of hatred, you know what? This guy, what is his name? Stephen Miller?
Yeah.
One of his. It was so interesting when I heard the woman who was writing the book about him, and I had the book in my house, but I didn't read it. But the way that he organizes the speeches for Trump, it's always about reversing, using whatever your enemy is using. Like the guy who was his big influence, his mentor, was a guy that I can't remember his name, who was actually a big leftist. And then he changed because a friend of his was killed by someone, whatever. And then he started using the same, appropriating the language of the people, like the people of color were using for the white people, for example. The same way that now the white people, if you read some of the comments of Trump, his followers write, thank you for ending racism. This is white people telling him, thank you for ending racism, because they feel that they were victims of racism against white people. Mm-hmm. You know, they started using, like, he started talking fake news, when he won only because of fake news. Like, he's using all the, everything that he's doing to you know, as if his enemy's doing it. So they are racist, but he's healing racism against white people, like, you know, reverse discrimination and all that crap. So I think that it's very evil, but it looks apparently that some people are waking up. I know people who were Trumpers who now hate him, whatever. It became a little bit too much, but...
Yeah, and I think... I think there were people in the past 2-4 years ago who just weren't that inspired by Hillary Clinton. So they stayed home thinking it wouldn't be a big deal. And it is a big deal. You know, you can't stay home. Yeah. You have to vote. If you don't get exactly what you want, it's like being a spoiled brat, right? You don't get exactly what you want, but you got to understand the system. You got to understand what's at stake and vote for the better choice. Even if it's not your best most, you know, your preferred choice.
Yeah.
I think people learned. I hope. We'll see.
Yeah, I hope so. And I hope that we're going to be making a lot of theater, great plays about this. I mean, this guy is going to be like, the comedians are going to miss him because it's like, it's at the same time, when you see the march, some of the protests of his followers, they are killing parody because you don't know if it's a parody, somebody making a joke about them, or if it's them when they do these things about the masks, you know, they get so upset about the masks. And they, so anyway, but it's, all right. So you wanted me to describe mi política theater?
Yeah. Yeah, tell us a little bit.
I wanted to touch a topic that I think is important.
Please do.
Because, which is humor. And I think, and I say this when I teach, and I do this in my shows, but I think it's very important because I think that we are in a moment that, well, this guy at least, sometimes we laugh out loud, right? For the things that he's saying, whatever, he's ridiculous. And humor is a super powerful tool, but usually it's better used by the oppressors than by people. Like, we all know that the first time that we are oppressed, that we are it's because somebody's making a joke about us, making fun of us, you know, because somebody's, or a woman, or a foreigner, you have an accent, or you're gay, or you're trans, or you are fat, or you're too tall, or too short. So the first time you felt terrible as a kid, whatever, it was a joke. Somebody's making fun of somebody who sounds like you or looks like you. So we know that you can destroy somebody with jokes. And this guy is more sensitive to people making jokes about him than anything else.
Oh, yeah.
But it's just about knowing how to aim, you know, like making sure that we're going to aim at the powerful, and then and knowing that we have to be very careful, because it is true. It's you can destroy completely somebody with a joke. So that's it. That's what I wanted to say. And the other thing is that you were asking me, what was your question? Something about like what I was trying to accomplish.
Yes.
And that is a point. Yeah. And I was like, for years and years, people always ask me if I am preaching to the converted. And I thought always a lot about that question. And I realized that, yeah, totally. I don't think I'm going to convince any Trumper, right wing or fascist about my ideas are fantastic. But also, I think it is, I was thinking about a church, a preaching, you know, makes me think about a church and a priest preaching, and he's always preaching to the converted. Like, he's not going around, or maybe they are going around and convincing people, but the point is that it's a way to, not a way to educate anybody or to make change everybody, transform everybody's political ideas. It's a way to create community, to be together, to share ideas. It's a way to bring social issues into a public space and have a dialogue, and maybe a Q&A at the end, or maybe people talk. My shows always have a lot of people. Whoever wants comes and tells me, I want to be in your show, I'm like, sure, I find a part for you, or they are part of the stage manager or whatever. And because it's a moment of community, it's a moment of like a lot of people coming together, and it happens to me all the time that I see people in a party like, oh, you know each other, and they're like, yeah, we met in your show, like tons of people who meet in my shows, and I love that. So so I think that if I try to, what do I try to accomplish, I would say that I'm preaching to the converted, that we are enjoying that time together, and hopefully, you know, learning from each other, and it's for us. It is for us completely. And I think that it's always a lot of, you know, I mean, the people who are in my show, my shows are very queer. And people were like, oh, sometimes I have straight people who tell me, like, oh, but straight people will love this. And I'm like, oh, no. And I appreciate that. But I don't think I would try to educate, go to a show in a Trump rally.
No.
A monologue. No.
That'd be abusing yourself, right?
Well, that would be horrible.
So, if people want to find out a little bit about what's coming up next with you, how would they do that?
I don't know, actually, because I'm not publicizing a lot. I have my Facebook where I announce things, my Instagram, both for Susanna Cook. And I'm just being invited to festivals and things, and I go and I do my thing. I mean, I go with my videos. I send my videos. But I'm not doing myself a lot of publicity except posting it on Facebook or Susanna Cook, you know.
Susanna Cook, S-U-S-A-N-A Cook, Instagram, Facebook, yeah. And believe it or not, we're just about done this time around, and it was really nice. I feel like I was dancing with you there, trying to get a sense of how we're going to talk and connect, and I got a feel for where you're coming from. I like I like your philosophy and your energy. It's really wonderful to be able to share it with people on the program. And I'm sure I would love to talk with you again in the future so we could expand on this. But before we go, what would you say to folks who are listening now, going through these tough times? I mean, you started off joking around about how, what you wanted was to be the most powerful, the most well-remembered artist of all time. And then you got into, how you're trying to be positive in a more, a real sense during these tough times. How would you share with those listening some insight, some humanity, so that they can better get through the day?
I am the opposite of that monologue. I'm actually a tall underground artist, and I always been, and I always thought that that was my thing. And I am more like I and I even though I read his book many years after I was doing theater, the Representations of the Intellectual by Edward Said, and he talks a lot about the artist. The real artist or the real intellectual is the one who's completely independent from the structures, that you're not going to be catering to institutions or universities or the people who are going to give you the money, that is completely independent. And I am that way. I told you, I work with dogs, I support myself and my art. I do get paid sometimes, but it's not like that would pay my bills. And I feel that it is almost like a spiritual connection. It's a way that theater, I see theater performance as a way to, for as an opportunity for growth for yourself and for the people who are around you. And I think that it shouldn't have anything to do with the industry. Those words like freak me out. The industry, the professional, like I think it's I do it because I think it's a moment of connection with people, connection with, like, art should also be an opportunity for us to question and think about a lot of issues, and it's like see things differently for a second. So my advice would be look for that connection. And I think that if you put some beautiful music and you grab a notebook and you start writing, and you don't know, in automatic writing, you don't even know what you're writing, you just let yourself go, you'll get somewhere. And I think, or dancing or painting, whatever is the way they're going to connect. We should do all do a little bit of all those things. I need to dance, I need to write, I need to. And then at this moment, you can do it only on video or on photos. And it's good. One day we're going to be together again in theaters and do live performances. But I think that for now, that's what we have. And that is, it's a good way to connect too, because it's like we're going to come on the other side of this, and we're going to be transformed. This is definitely a transformative experience, and I think it's going to be, at the end, it's not going to be, that bad. We're all going to be different artists than we were before. That's what I think.
Well said, Susanna Cook. So nice to have you on Troubadours and Rock on Tours. And I'm going to play a song right after our conversation. What song would you like me to play? What pops into your head that we can have everybody dance together to?
On Ira by Sass. That's my favorite song to dance.
Excellent. Excellent.
All right. Thank you so much.
Take care.
You too. Bye.
On ira écouter Harlem au coin de Manhattan. On ira rougir l'été dans les souks à Amman. On ira nager dans le lit du fleuve Sénégal. Et on verra brûler bombé sous un feu de Bengale. On ira gratter le ciel en dessous de Kyoto. On ira sentir Riobat au cœur de Janeiro. On lèvera nos yeux sur le plafond de la chapelle Sixtine. Et on lèvera nos verres dans le café Pushkin. Oh, quelle est belle notre chance.
des étoiles, nous sommes l'univers. Vous êtes un grain de sable, nous sommes le désert. Vous êtes mille pages et moi je suis la plume. Oh 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 oh. Vous êtes l'horizon et nous sommes la mer. Vous êtes les saisons et nous sommes la terre. Vous êtes le rivage et moi je suis l'écume.
Oh 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 oh.
On dira que les poètes n'ont pas de drapeau, on fera des jours de fête tant qu'on a deux héros. On saura que les enfants sont les gardiens de l'âme et qu'il y a des reines autant qu'il y a de femmes. On dira que les rencontres font les plus beaux voyages. On verra qu'on ne mérite que ceux qui se partagent. On entendra chanter des musiques d'ailleurs et l'on saura donner ce qu'on a de meilleur. Oh, quelle est belle notre chance. Nous sommes l'univers. Vous êtes un grain de sable, nous sommes le désert. Vous êtes mille pages et moi je suis la plume.
Oh 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 oh, oh.
Vous êtes l'horizon et nous sommes la mer. Vous êtes les saisons et nous sommes la terre. Vous êtes le rivage et moi je suis l'écume.
Oh 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 oh.
Vous êtes les étoiles, nous sommes l'univers. Vous êtes un grain de sable, nous sommes le désert. Vous êtes mille pages et moi je suis la plume.
Oh 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 oh, oh.
Vous êtes l'horizon et nous sommes la mer. Vous êtes les saisons et nous sommes la terre.
And now two poems by acclaimed Argentinian writer Jorge Luis Borges. The first is called Music Box. Music of Japan, parsimoniously from the water clock, the drops unfold in lazy honey or ethereal gold. That over time reiterates a weave, eternal, fragile, enigmatic, bright. I fear that everyone will be the last. They are a yesterday come from the past, but from what shrine, from what mountain's slight garden, what visuals by an unknown sea, and from what modest melancholy, from what lost and rediscovered afternoon do they arrive at their far future me? Who knows? No matter. When I hear it play, I am. I want to be. I bleed away. This piece is called A Compass. All things are words belonging to that language in which someone or something, night and day, writes down the infinite babble that is, per se, the history of the world. And in that hodgepodge, both Rome and Carthage, he and you and I, my life that I don't grasp, this painful load of being riddle, randomness, or code, and all of Babel's gibberish stream by. Behind the name is that which has no name. Today I have felt its shadow gravitate in this blue needle, in its trembling sweep, casting its influence toward the farthest strait, with something of a clock glimpsed in a dream, and something of a bird that stirs in its sleep.
Yeah. Riot Crew. We be 27 days out of Mogadishu. Now there's something going wrong. We got red skies at dawn. Can't find the captain and the lifeboat's gone.
We're going down with the ship. We're going down, 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 down with the ship.
Like the seas, then we run out of pitch. Now we pray to the Lord. How we stay afloat with a 3 meter hole in the bottom of the boat.
We're going down with the ship. We're going down, 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 down with the ship.
Willow tree stands on a hill watching over this valley in Argentina, where our ancestors live in cities so old before the cattle came and the despots reigned. A glory of food aromatic traveled with the warm breeze in the early afternoon, whilst lovers made love and then fell asleep deep, secure inside each other's arms.
Into open lane.
And there you have it, episode 392 of Troubadours and Raconteurs, with yours truly, E.W. Conundrum Demure. I'd like to thank those folks who made this episode possible. First and foremost, Susanna Cook. I also would like to thank the writer Jorge Luis Borges, and these musical artists, Django Reinhardt, Stefan Grappelli, Modesky Martin and Wood, Melvina Reynolds, Zaz, Wren, Todd Rundgren and Rivers Cuomo, Future Island, and of course Branford Marsalis and Terrence Blanchard too. And of course, I'd like to thank you for listening. Until next time, let's give it a go and do our best with this time. Take care.